No such thing as free buses. In his successful campaign to win the primary election to become the Democratic Party's candidate for the 4th of November election for the mayor of New York City, Zohran Mamdani, the left winger, ran on a promise to lower the cost of living for working class New Yorkers. He is a member of a group of reformist social democrats calling themselves the Democratic Socialists of America, who have chosen to bore from within the Democratic Party, and among his proposals was fast, fare free buses. It is not a new idea. It's been put into practice in some places. In fact, in itself, it's a good idea. Fares do restrict people's freedom to travel, and fare collecting, even via plastic cards and ticket machines, is a waste of resources. More people travelling by public transport and less by car will help reduce air pollution and carbon emissions. Free transport in a socialist society would be run for people to use as and when they want it. But a distinction needs to be drawn between free transport as a reform within capitalism and free transport as part of socialist society, where all goods and services will be free. Under capitalism, where there is no such thing as a free anything, the question arises of how free transport would be funded. Mamdani's supporters, like Matt Brunig, say that his plan will be paid for by increased local taxes. Brunig explained, "Most people seem to realise that if we shifted to a fee-funded school system, we'd need to roll back property and other taxes in order to make sure people had the money to pay the fees. By the same token," he argued, "introducing free buses would have the opposite effect. It would mean people would save money from which to pay the increase in taxes to fund it." This makes some sense, but it rather undermines Mamdani's claim that free buses would lower the cost of living, whatever other merits it might have. There is in fact a link via the cost of living between free services and wages. Fares are an important item in the cost of living, and it is the cost of living which largely determines the level of wages and salaries. Whatever reduces the cost of living will tend also to reduce wages. Anything provided free by someone else relieves employers of having to pay their employees to cover this, as would be the case if fares were abolished. It would be a subsidy to employers, whatever its other merits might be. Before everybody can benefit from free transport, the whole wages system needs to be abolished. The means of production must be converted from the class property of a privileged few into the common property of the whole community. This would also create the framework within which the problem of the motor car and its pollution can be rationally tackled. Once the means of production are the common heritage of all and are under democratic control, then the profit motive and the price system can be abolished. Wealth can be produced solely for people to use. People can have free access not only to travel facilities, but to all the other things they need to live and enjoy life. Goods will not be priced, but will be available for all to take freely according to their needs. Woolly thinking. The money is there to make a better society and economy. It's just in the wrong hands. We need to raise taxes on the wealthiest in society and on those corporations who make record profits while our members struggle to put food on the table. That wealth should then be invested back into our communities, in housing, in health, in education, and in an industrial strategy that creates secure, unionised jobs. And investment must go hand in hand with a just transition that puts public need before corporate greed. So wrote Sarah Woolley, the General Secretary of the Bakers Union, in the Morning Star. By money, she presumably means the monetary value that is attached to wealth produced in a capitalist society. Money, in this sense, comes into being when the wealth workers produce is sold. This is initially divided into wages and surplus value as the part of what workers produce over and above their wages, which is appropriated by the business corporation that employs them. The surplus value then comes to be divided into profits, ground rent, and interest. These are taxed by the government to get money to spend. What is left is accumulated by capitalists as more capital, with some spent to fund a privileged lifestyle. So at the end of a year, a given amount of wealth, as measured in terms of its monetary value, is produced. There are also wealthy individuals and corporations who own previously produced wealth. Woolley seems to accept this setup and wants the government to change how what is produced under it is distributed. Some of the wealth appropriated by capitalists in the course of a year is to be taxed, as well as some of the wealth accumulated by them in previous years. This money is to be spent on better health, housing and education for the wage workers and their dependents, and reinvested in providing secure and better paid jobs. She doesn't put a figure on this, but presumably the amount the government would spend would be much more than it now does. She doesn't seem to have taken into account what would happen if this was attempted. Remember, we are talking about this happening in a capitalist economy, where decisions about wealth production are in the hands of profit-seeking corporations. So what would happen? First, the profits that the corporations get to keep would be smaller. Since profit-making is what motivates them, that incentive will be reduced. Less profit will mean less investment, resulting in less wealth, less money in her sense, being available to tax in the following year. Less investment would also mean fewer jobs, and so less paid out in wages. In short, there would be an economic downturn. The fact is that a government cannot simply take money from the capitalist class and spend it to improve things for the working class. It cannot put public need before corporate greed. Woolley would come back and say that in that case the government would have to use some of the money taken from the wealthy and their greedy corporations and itself invest it. That would create other problems, as the state investment would also have to yield profits to be sustainable. Maybe she does envisage a state-run capitalist economy as looks. But it's more likely to be a typical example of the confused rhetoric employed by left-wing trade union leaders and by the left-wing politicians behind the New Corbyn Party, which reflects a lack of understanding of how capitalism works.
You've been listening to World Socialist Radio, produced by the Socialist Party of Great Britain. To find out more and to take out a free trial subscription to the Socialist Standard, visit spgb.net/podcast.